Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
So Michael Irvin just can't stop talking about Dak Prescott. It's just, you know, it's a story that won't die. Tom Brady to Dallas rumors days after Michael Irvin said some people with connections told him the Cowboys would consider moving on from Dak to TB12. Irvin, man, he's been in full control spin mode, saying those comments didn't come from the organization itself, then telling a local Dallas newspaper he's surprised by all the traction the story's gotten. I'm shocked, Irvin said, quote, I'm blown away by this. I said what somebody said. That should no way be taken as those are my thoughts on what should happen. Ain't no way in the world that should happen. That would be insane. Are you kidding me? Are you out of your mind? It's over for Tom. Oh, boy, that's a lot to take in, Rob Parker. Do you agree with Michael Irvin, the playmaker?
First, I'm going to say Michael Irvin has walked this back so far that he's now in Mexico. where are we going with this? Like, I get it. They got to you.
I think they said, we're considering moving on from you. I mean, really. Favorite legend.
Because I don't believe Michael Irvin is a smart guy. He's in the television business. People listen to what Michael Irvin said. And for him to say now, like, he's surprised that it got, you're going to dump Dak and bring in Tom Brady. You don't think that's going to get attention, or are people going to be like, what? What? Michael Irvin
said it with a little conviction.
A Hall of Famer.
Guys have told me significant people.
So I think that it's kind of weird now to hear him back up. I don't know about his whole idea that Brady is, it's over for Brady, Tom. Is that the quote? Does he mean that he should retire? He can't play anymore?
I think that's what he said.
Is that what he's basically saying?
I think it's up for our own assumptions.
Right. When you say it's over for Tom, Tom is going to be playing in the league. I don't think that even, you know, the idea of moving on, like I said, if you were the Cowboys and you're Jerry Jones and you think I got talent and you have a chance to win, it's not like ridiculous to think that Tom Brady could not come in with the pieces and maybe win something for you if you didn't have confidence in Dak or if you didn't want to sign Dak to a contract. So I don't think it's like totally ridiculous, but I think that the Cowboys were just upset because they know that Tom Brady's not coming there and they don't want to bend the confidence of Dak Prescott. So that's why you have to, you know, get rid of it. Let them know up front that, no, we're not believing in this. We don't want Tom Brady. And the same thing with Mike McCarthy when he poo-pooed the whole Tom Brady. You can't talk about a guy you don't have, especially when you have a young quarterback still trying to find his way and trying to get to a place of trying to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, go ahead, Greg.
No, go for it.
Look, I agree with you. I think they got in Michael Irvin's ear and was like, look, you not going to be in games. You're not going to be in the suite. We'll call the NFL Network, whatever it may be. But, I think he's wrong. I think he went too far in saying Brady's done. Now, I don't rule out the possibility that if Tom Brady went to another franchise with a different system, he's 43, he might not have the success that people expect. But in New England, all I see in Tom Brady is at 43, he can no longer carry mediocre talent at the skill positions like he has most of his career outside of Randy Moss and Gronkowski and maybe a couple other guys. So if you put the right skill position players around him, say they went out and got A.J. Green, say they got Greg Olsen at tight end, they were 12-4 last year. I keep saying it. They beat Buffalo, a playoff team, twice. They beat Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger. They beat your Philadelphia Eagles that you love so much. And Dallas, who didn't make the playoffs, was a pretty good team. So they are still a good team. Tom Brady can still be a very productive quarterback in this league. Look, and I'm not saying this because I know you love Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady threw 24 touchdowns. That's only two fewer than Aaron Rodgers. His yards per game was higher than Aaron Rodgers. His QBR was higher than Aaron Rodgers. So if you're saying Tom Brady is completely done, then maybe you're saying that about Aaron Rodgers, which I don't think is the case.
We should point out that Brett Favre, Green Bay Packer quarterback, said Tom Brady's good to go. He's okay. Like, this is getting silly, right? We know Tom Brady's fine.
We know he's Tom Brady's going to play in the league.
You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of LeBron last year struggling. Even though Tom Brady went 12-4, LeBron struggling. He's a washed king, and now we got Michael Irvin. Oh, it's over. It's done. They lost in the first round. Like, let's just ease up on Tom Brady. He's fine.
Yeah, Tom Brady, it's not over for Tom Brady. When I listen to Michael Irvin, and you hear the reports that he put out there about, you know, Tom Brady possibly being the choice over Dak Prescott and then backpedaling to Mexico, as you put it. It's one of those things where you start to backpedal so far, you start saying things that you know you don't even believe.
Right. That's
like,
how bad it
to
is.
To say that Tom Brady is just, it's over for Tom Brady, you can't measure the heart of a champion. Like, you just can't. You don't say for a guy like Tom Brady with the accolades and the accomplishments and the things that he's done in this league, that is just over. Now, we can say his play is declining.
And we all agree
with
that.
And we all agree with that.
We all agree.
I think everybody unanimously agrees with that. But to say it's over, that's saying he can't produce or be effective in any situation. And so I think that's totally absurd. I don't agree with that 1%. And when I look at Tom Brady, you have other people who have done these things where we've said, well, Adrian Peterson.
Right.
Oh, he's not going to come. He's not going to be effective. He's done. Look what he's done. He's continued to be consistent. Now, he's not the Adrian Peterson of the Minnesota Vikings, but he still produces. He's still an effective part of that offense.
We saw Peyton Manning win a championship.
We saw Peyton Manning do it.
Right?
We've seen players change helmets, change jerseys, and Tom hasn't done that yet, and still be effective. And so for him to say that it's over for Tom Brady, That's far-fetched.
People were probably saying Ryan Tannehill's done after Miami. He gets to the AFC Championship game with the Titans. It's silly. Michael Irvin, clean it up, buddy.
No mercy.
Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid combined for 52 points last night in a win over the Clippers. The win extends Philly's win streak to 3. And they now are 25-2 at home, best record in the NBA. This comes after a rough stretch of criticism from the likes of Barkley and Shaq. Some offseason trade rumors, and Joel Embiid embracing a villain role on social media. Kawhi Leonard did actually play for LA last night, did score 30. But Rick Bucher, we're going to start with the Sixers. Fox Sports NBA analyst Rick Bucher's here. Rick, did this Sixers win prove maybe that we were a little premature? I shouldn't say we. Rob was premature in breaking up Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons.
No, not at all. I mean, look, we can't just take one game and decide that everything has been fixed, especially a game at home. There's nothing wrong with the talent of Joel Embiid. There's nothing wrong with the talent of Ben Simmons. What's wrong is the two of them together. I can go analytics with you.
Thank you.
And tell you that combo, from an offensive efficiency standpoint or a defensive efficiency standpoint, it's not their best combo. Not by a stretch. They got 4 or 5 other ones that are more efficient. The other part is this great divide between what they do at home and what they do on the road and the consistency of their play. If they played any semblance of the way they played last night on a regular basis, I'd say give it a ride. Even though from a basketball standpoint, I don't think it fits, let's see. But they don't give you that consistency because there's a void when it comes to leadership. I'll ask you right now, I ask all of you, who's the leader of this team? Is it Joel Embiid?
He's playing in Miami.
Okay. Well, but bottom line is nobody has grabbed the reins. And so almost to their benefit, take one of them out of the equation and the other one is going to have to. Or we're going to find out whether he's capable of it. If we redefined who Ben Simmons was, if we stopped calling him a point guard and looked at him through the prism of Kawhi Leonard or Giannis Antetokounmpo as a forward or a point forward, a forward with playmaking capabilities, this wouldn't be such a mystery. We wouldn't be looking at it because you look at Giannis and what he has in the center position, it's Brook Lopez. He can space the floor. You look at what Kawhi Leonard has. It's Ivica Zubac, who you're not going to play through offensively, right? He's there for defensive purposes primarily. That's what you have to do to get the best out of Ben Simmons. And Joel Embiid is not. And if you're going to do that, then you're not going to get the best out of Joel Embiid.
Yeah, I agree with most of what you say. I don't think Embiid's where Brook Lopez is as a floor spacer. Now, because Brook has become a really good three-point shooter. If he were that, then they would fit. Because I think Ben can play like Giannis. But I'm with you for the most part in that they like Simmons or Embiid said it last week, the floor spacing is jacked up. Mm-hmm. Because to get somebody to guard Simmons, you have to put him down low in the fourth quarter especially. And then that forces Embiid out and takes him away from what he does best.
Right.
While he's a decent shooter, he can't be at the post. But I think this is perfect because to break them up already, let's say they broke them up last year, I think that would have been premature. Now, even to break them up at the deadline this year, I think would have been premature. You got the rest of the season, see what they do in the playoffs. If they, because they still, I would argue, have the most talent in the East. And if they can put it together, the fact that they play so well at home does tell you it's something there. And you're right, Rick, they don't have leadership.
Talent on paper.
Right.
And yeah, but hold on. They're 25-2 at home, and I know it's at home. But they've beat the top four teams in every conference or in each conference at home. And you're right, it's the lack of leadership and real camaraderie and chemistry in that locker room that makes them so bad on the road. However, the talent is there. Last night they started Furkan Korkmaz at the three instead of Al Horford. Now, he didn't play well. He was coming off 230-plus point games, didn't even score last night. But they started Glenn Robinson instead of him in the second half.
And Josh Richardson.
Right, and Josh Richardson. So space the floor more with the shooter instead of Al Horford, and they found some success. I'm with you in that look. If they have a disappointing postseason, I'm doing one of two things. I'm moving Embiid, because you can get a haul for him, I think. And I think Ben Simmons can be like a point center even, you know, or a point forward, whatever you want to call him. Or I don't know who this coach is. Phil Jackson could have been the guy, but he's obviously not coming back to coaching. If you can find a coach who can maximize those two together and work their personalities together, has a scheme that might work, that would be the guy.
Who's the guy who invented the Rubik's Cube? I don't know who that is.
I'm with Rick,
but make the trade then.
I'm with Rick that at this point, excuse me, I would be willing after this postseason to part these two and go find somebody.
What if it's a good? What if they go out in 6 or 7 in the conference finals? I'm just asking.
Yeah, well, I mean, you'd have to rethink that because of how they lost. Or whatever.
But the other thing is they're locked up financially. Mm-hmm. Like they've already invested in all the pieces. Are they going to get better? Al Horford's not going to get better. And are you going to count on like Josh Richardson knock down threes? That's the big issue. Is that you have to have all these things around you to be perfect for them to be ideal. And I think it's asking too much. Look, it's a fair question. If you got to the conference finals, would you hold on to it? Would you?
And if they get knocked out in the first round, I think you would take a look and go, what?
I mean, Rick, we got to break it up, right? In Portland with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum to an extent. They decided, we're not going to break it up. They get to the conference finals last year.
Right.
This year, they're on the outside looking into the playoffs. So maybe you give it one more chance, but that might not even work.
But here's the difference. We went through the whole process. We had the losing of 4 or 5 years. The promise for all of that was, but we're going to build a champion.
Yep.
Not a team that gets to the second round. You had that before the process started.
Mm-hmm.
A championship. If you look at the league and you look at this team, do you say, I see this team winning a championship at some point? If you don't, then I say you reshuffle the deck.
Which one would you give up, trade?
I would give up Ben Simmons because I believe that Joel Embiid. Now, I talked to a number of GMs about this. If you're trying to win right now, you trade Ben Simmons. If you are playing the long game because of Joel Embiid's health and questions about his durability, you would go with Ben Simmons, and you're going to assume that he's going to develop a jump shot at some point in his life before he retires. I feel like Embiid is the problem with using him as Brook Lopez and just as a spacer is he can do so much more.
Yes.
You can play through him. He is a passer. He can play below the free throw line. I want to fully maximize who he is. Ben, because I've seen Markelle Fultz improve his jump shot. Lonzo Ball's a jump shooter. Giannis Antetokounmpo has a three-point shot. This, to me, is the great mystery in the NBA, is that Ben Simmons, after all these years, still does not have any semblance of a jump shot. Never mind three-point range. A pull-up jump shot from 17, 18 feet.
Yeah, it's what we saw last night with the 76ers is what frustrates every Sixers fan. This is who they have the potential to be, but this is not what they are every single night, night in and night out. In part, it's because of the effort that these guys play with. You said something that stuck out to me about leadership and not identifying who and what that leadership looks like on that team. I think they thought Al Horford was going to be that guy that steps in and be the leader and corral these guys and help guide them on how to win and how to be professionals. That hasn't happened. Right. And because that hasn't happened, you still see this up and down roller coaster of a team because they struggle with identity. Are we going to be a big team and play through Embiid, or are we going to be a run-and-gun team and let Ben Simmons just fast break it and get to the hole and then space the floor out? They don't know that. And so I think the answer is, Noah, it's not premature. When it talks about, are we going to blow this team up, or should they? Yes, because it's not working on a night-in and night-out basis. They show flashes, and every team shows flashes at some point. But this team, the expectations, to your point, is championship.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen.
They have currently, matched the Knicks' road record. Like, as bad as the Knicks' team is, they have the same road record. That tells you that there's something not right in there.
Right. Your best players have to be your hardest workers.
The scary thing for Philadelphia, and I get it, and I'm with you guys, if it goes south this postseason, you break it up. But the scary thing is you're looking at it like, man, we got two great young players.
That's
one's a playmaker, one's a big man.
Right.
Historically,
that should go together.
That would have been great in the NBA, but with this new NBA with the three-point shooting, it doesn't.
You can't be a point guard if you can't shoot the three. You just cannot be an elite point guard if you can't shoot the three, which is why I'm saying the first thing that we have to do is we have to redefine who Ben Simmons is. Then we can start to get to the heart
Rick,
of what this is.
He has to almost be a center.
Whatever label you put on it, he has to play below the free throw line. And if he plays below the free throw line, that means Joel Embiid cannot play below the free throw line.
It should be noted, Ben Simmons.
It's as simple as that.
Had a he can push double. It in transition.
Yes.
But when they're in the half court,
well, last night in the half court, he torched Morris, Kawhi, Paul George.
He can drive.
Talk a little bit about the Clippers.
He can penetrate. One dribble away from the basket?
Right.
He's amazing.
You see that dipsy doodle shot he made?
The reverse, right?
Right. Score.
About the Clippers. We got a couple Clippers fanboys here who think they're better than the Lakers.
If
the Lakers had lost last night to the Sixers,
you say that like it's,
I'm just joking around.
Right, like it's
what's
ridiculous.
The name of this show? Undisputed?
Right.
That is undisputed.
Yes.
That is undisputed.
If the Lakers had lost like this last night, we would have, LeBron couldn't come through in the fourth. Anthony Davis was.
Don't try to lead. Just ask the question.
Listen, it's one of those situations where Paul George was awful, 3-for-15. He's having the worst shooting year from the field in the last 5 years. Yeah, I'm loading up on anti. Not getting to the free throw line, one of the worst levels of his career.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on the Clippers heading into the All-Star break, now 4 games back of the Lakers.
I can't wait. This is what I love. This is what I love about
the
battle. The battle for who's going
to
be in first in the Western Conference.
Right.
They're playing in the same building. I'm still going to sleep in my bed.
Right.
Oh, the colors are different. God, this feels.
You got seven home games.
The Lakers will have seven home games.
The Lakers should be load managing because of that, and they're not. But at any rate, your thoughts on the Clippers.
But that's the whole thing. It's exactly what you said. What we're seeing the Lakers do now, it's full system go. Like, we're still seeing, I'm still watching the Clippers and I'm checking out various pieces and how they fit. We got Marcus Morris into the equation last night and knocking down some big shots. And yet, within the rhythm, he wasn't taking anything away from anybody else. The issues with Paul George simply is, you don't have a traditional point guard. And by the way, he's like changing systems now, again.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's going to take a bit of acclimation for him. But when I, and you also see why they made the deal for Marcus Morris, because size is an issue on a regular basis and in a slowdown.
And he took on the big man last night, right? If you're a Clippers, you love that, right?
The dog that they have,
yes,
the personality that they have, the
listen
depth
to this
that
man.
They have.
We know this. We all know that Marcus Morris is a goon. Go ahead.
Yeah.
He's not a goon. He's not a goon. He shoots 44%.
He shoots. And in the playoffs as well.
He always gets in fights with LeBron, dating back to his Detroit day. Like, this
and
guy.
You say that like that. It's a bad thing.
Right. Mm. I want a guy that's going to challenge the best player.
Yes.
Yeah. Challenge. No, I'm excited to see what the Clippers are going to be at the end of the year. It is so clear to me that Kawhi Leonard brought the same mindset that he had in Toronto, which is, we'll get through the regular season. We'll play well. We'll put the pieces together. But, man, when we get to April, May, and June, that's when we're going to turn it up.
They did get a little lucky beating the Sixers on a fluky shot, and then Kevin Durant played 12 minutes in the finals. But
Rick, let me ask you this, because you can watch the Clippers, and it's impressive that they're where they are record-wise with guys in and out of the lineup, and they haven't had time to practice. It's not like they're going to have a ton of time before the playoffs to practice. Right. So is there any concern that they're just not going to have the time to really get fully 100% in sync heading into the playoffs?
My greater concern is that how many games are they going to have where they play 48 minutes, where they are all in and mentally focused for 48 minutes because of their depth, because of what they have. I see too many games already where they're playing like the Warriors, where it's like, we'll turn it up here, and then we'll roll them over, right? And when you're the Warriors and you've already won a championship and you've already established, we know what it feels like to go through a 7-game series and to play 48 solid minutes every night. You've built up that endurance, that mental endurance, that physical endurance. That's my one question. Are they being a little too laissez-faire at this point?
Do they have a little bit? Can they take a little bit from last year when they pushed the Warriors and they won those games in Oakland? I'm saying the core group, so they never give up. Well, but they never give up is what I'm saying. Can they use some of that even though they have a couple of new stars?
Yeah, no. I'm not worried about the mentality as much as the synchronicity. Like, so when we get into tough situations, what's our first option? Right. What's the first thing we're looking for? So that everybody knows this is the first thing we're going for, and this is the second thing.
That's the Paul George question right there.
And yes, and that order and that organization and that comfort of, oh, we got this. Because you see, that this is why Toronto it continues to be so good.
Yeah.
Because there's no situation that they can face right now that they haven't faced before that they know, oh, we're going to go to this. Oh, Fred's got it. I know what we're going to do when Fred has it. Oh, Pascal, we're going through Pascal. I know where I need to be and what we're going to do.
Remember last year, Lou Williams was the number one option in that series against the Warriors.
Yeah.
He's now what, number three maybe on the pecking order?
Yeah, that's probably
interesting.
You say that like that's a
good thing to have that guy number three.
We shall see. Zion Williamson sure played inspired last night, dropping a career-high 31 on Portland. Zion also had 9 rebounds, 5 assists. And listen, folks, LeBron, KD, and Luka Doncic are the only other 19-year-olds ever, Rick, ever to have a 31-9-5 game. Zion's averaging 21 and just under 8 boards through a whopping 9 games this year. As Rob Parker shakes his head, Rick, has Zion Williamson already established himself as a superstar in the NBA?
Who put him up to this?
I know you guys didn't.
I'm trying to educate these guys, Rick. Me and Greg are on one side, you're on the other.
Are we handing out the superstar tag like they hand out keychains at a trade show?
Yes. Apparently so.
That's what we do. This is 2020.
Welcome.
Superstar. He's not even an all-star yet.
Thank you.
He is, now, I will say this. He is exciting and fun to watch. He has shown some superstar-like qualities. But right now, he's an energy guy. That's what he is. He's an energy guy, and he's a dynamic energy guy because he's so athletic. But superstar is a guy who, I mean, first of all, what's the accomplishment at this point?
Thank you. Nothing. Like, he's a celebrity.
Yes, yes.
In this day and age, with the internet, with the social media, that's right. That's what they are.
So, but for me, a superstar lead you to championships. He's the best player on your team. Zion Williamson is not the best player on this team. They don't play through him offensively. Defensively, he's not very good. I mean, he's kind of lost defensively. What surprises me is that as dynamic and athletic as he is, he's kind of a phone booth rebounder. Like, I would have expected that he was going to be able to, that was one thing. He was going to put up huge numbers. Offensively, he can go get his own, and he can do some electric things. But, man, I mean, Judge Judy a superstar? Because she's very popular.
So, Greg Jennings, let me read the definition of superstar. You'll take it.
Please do.
According to
Whose definition?
Superstar, the dictionary definition. Look it up.
Okay.
High profile and extremely successful. Greg Jennings?
He's high profile.
Take it away.
Look, Zion Williamson is a superstar. The question should really be, can he live up to the superstardom? And my answer is, right now with the sample size that we've seen, Rick, I get it. I get it. What has he done? Well, he's been effective. He's been very effective when he's been given the opportunity, when he's been given the minutes, and when he's been asked to be effective in these 9 games, as you're going to so eloquently allude
to. 9 games, my goodness.
Listen to what I'm saying. When you talk about a superstar, you're talking about a guy who was the number one overall pick. He has all this hype surrounding him. And everyone has this expectation of him and what they consider he could be or should be or will he be.
Yeah.
Right now, with what we're seeing, even last night, he is showcasing to us that, yes, I'm going to live up to the hype. I get it. It's 9 games. But
What was that? Going to. Did you say? You said going to. He's going to live up to the hype.
Yes, meaning he is in it. He's going to live up to the hype.
He's doing that
he's
now.
He's living what, it.
Rick, the number.
He's first going, 9 games. I'm going to make it after the show. I'm not in bacon right now.
Hey, you look like you already had the bacon.
Rick, first 9 games.
Yes.
Last 30 years, nobody else in NBA history has scored 20 or more in 7 of the
Why we go to 30 years?
You're asking for numbers.
Why are they those numbers? Because when they went back, they had to figure out like a number that worked so that they could put him in
Rob
there.
Parker, a minutes restriction coming off an injury. He's scratching the surface.
I just think it's premature, and this is the life that we live in. We want to crown people right away because they were the first overall pick.
No, we're not crowning anybody, but Zion Williamson.
Or because he's on the social media and everybody knows who he is because he played at Duke. He's a fine player. He's not a superstar.
Okay. Nobody's...
Rick's definition is perfect. That's the real definition of a superstar.
What? Which part?
Is Ja Morant a superstar?
Trae Young is not a superstar.
Is Luka Doncic
a superstar? Is a superstar, yes.
I could argue, and I agree, Trae Young is not a superstar yet. But there's more evidence to back up Trae Young being a superstar than Zion Williamson. Trae Young is starting in the All-Star game because of all the fans voting for him.
Right.
Trae Young is putting up I bet I can look up some numbers.
How
many players have averaged 30-9 in their
second
year? Zion's played 9 games
they
and
are
5-4.
They're the 10th seed right now. I'll tell you right now,
congratulations.
Greg, nobody wants to see Zion Williamson in the first round after he's got 30 games.
Yeah, I'm sure the Lakers
are just I don't think they're scared.
That is a
dynamic player who can take over games right now. Already.
Wait a minute. Zion, he hasn't taken over a game yet.
He's played nine games. He's on a minutes restriction,
okay,
Rick.
Okay, so with all of
in
that,
limited,
I think Chris made a great point. If we're just going with superstardom because you're popular, because everybody wants to see you succeed, Trae Young is a superstar. Without question, he's a superstar. And I'm sorry, you're saying Ja Morant is not a superstar.
He's going to be the rookie of the year.
Rookie of the year. He's not a superstar, but Zion Williamson is?
I know it doesn't sound logical. He could be the rookie of the year.
Because it's not logical.
Say it again.
It's not logical.
Superstar, high profile, extremely successful.
When you put that definition down,
tell America.
This is
you
sports.
Don't believe in dictionaries.
That's talking about TV stars, actors, actresses, sports.
This is
the English language.
You surprise
Chris.
Me, Greg. You surprise me the most because.
We expect that from Jay
yes,
Mack.
Because
forward thinking,
because you know how hard it is
I
to
do.
Achieve different various status levels in the game.
And to keep it
and
going.
I would think that you wouldn't give that out so quickly. Because there are guys I'm sure you played with who had like three or four amazing games.
But he has to earn it.
And you didn't say, oh, that dude's a superstar.
Odell Beckham Jr.
Some talent, you can identify it right away. Yes. And I think we can't just say, oh, he's not a superstar because he hasn't had the opportunity to showcase it on a big, large scale or sample size. What he's doing, he's a superstar. To come in with all the hype, to be number one overall pick, to have a team pretty much say, we're looking for him, we can't wait to start. The league shifted everything as far as watching, just so we can watch.
So is Trae Young a superstar? I'm
not saying Trae Young is a superstar.
Why not? He's got all of that.
He's a good player.
Why not?
I will say this.
He's in the All-Star game.
Listen to me. I will take this from Rick. And I will gladly take it from Chris. But from you, Rob, I can't take it.
Yeah. He's flopping like a politician.
Because Pat Mahomes is not a superstar. Lamar Jackson is not a superstar.
They want Pat Mahomes to be the GOAT.
Nobody said GOAT. Right.
He's in the East. He's in room.
He ain't no GOAT.
Let's redefine it.
Patrick Mahomes is a superstar.
Thank you. No, but he is. He's a GOAT?
He's a superstar.
We're just saying he's potentially
that. How many superstars do you have in the NBA currently? Because if you're just saying championships, which you said earlier, does that mean Giannis is not a superstar with an MVP award?
No, I could say Giannis is a superstar.
Okay. He's leading his team to this.
I think you had to think
about that?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I think Rick is... I agree with his premise. I don't say you got to win a championship.
But you should be leading your team there.
You cannot be a superstar in the NBA without consistently leading your team to the playoffs.
Again.
There's no way.
Yeah, here's the thing. Guys will always get their numbers. For me, a superstar gets everybody else's numbers. He makes the game easier for everybody else. And that was the only thing that I had to, that gave me pause with Giannis, because he's a great dynamic player. And in various ways, he makes them go. But you've seen how they play when you take him out of the equation. They're still very good. Mm-hmm. And I need to see him do that in the postseason when it becomes, we're going to game plan to stop you. And you've got to be able to adjust your game. We're not looking, this is what always bothers me. And we're going to hear it with, if they don't make it, we're going to hear it about Giannis. Oh, they would get somebody. Chris Middleton can't be the second best guy on the team. LeBron James in Cleveland. Oh, if they'd only get him help. And then he goes to Miami and he learns how to win a championship. He learns how to make other guys better. And now suddenly it's different and you can do it with almost anybody.
I want to piggyback on something else you said about Zion, because look, I think he's going to put up, if he stays healthy, he's going to be like a 25-11 guy. And I love the fact that he doesn't dominate the ball. And you don't have to really run plays for him other than, you know, they get it to him in the post.
Right.
But I think that makes him be able to fit with other guys perfectly because he doesn't have to dominate the ball. However, when we talk about the superstars, Giannis, LeBron, Kawhi, Steph Curry, James Harden, they are guys that when all else fails, you can give it to them on the perimeter and they can create something off the dribble without even dominating the ball, but they can create their own shot. I don't see that yet in Zion yet.
No.
Will he ever be that guy? So he may be a guy that's 25-11, making the All-Star every year, and a legitimate star, but not the number one guy. Anthony Davis, I don't think, is a number one guy. He's 1A because he can't do what the other guys I just mentioned can do.
So is Anthony Davis not a superstar?
He's a, I would call him a superstar. I would call him that.
No. But Anthony Davis is not a superstar.
No, because he does not fit the definition of making other guys better.
Your definition.
My definition.
Okay.
Yes.
But he doesn't fit you guys, though. Your definition is like, celebrity popularity. No, AD doesn't have that.
Steve Nash, a superstar. He made everybody else better.
He was a superstar.
But Anthony Davis, not a superstar.
That's not even. You say that as if it's extraordinary that we would say Steve Nash, who was a two-time MVP,
he was a superstar,
and was the catalyst of this team. That we would look at him as a superstar and Anthony Davis not a superstar.
But you're saying Anthony Davis not a superstar.
And Greg, you know what?
Yeah,
you're
but
talking
that's not hard for me.
It's also unfair to big guys because big guys don't always, as you said,
nowadays
with Giannis,
they
make
do.
Everybody better.
Nowadays they do.
Joel Embiid, where's he? Superstar?
Not yet.
Yeah, he,
I'm with you on that.
I think he has. I think he has superstar-like qualities.
And Greg said he's not going to take it from me or whatever, but at the control room.
Well, that stuck with you, didn't it?
He got them to give him some.
Here we go. Yeah, yeah. Somebody's in his ear.
I just want them to play the video of when you told everybody how great Kwame Brown was going to be because he was the first one.
What?
Stop it. Stop
yeah, that's
it, Rob.
Silly. I really you like
get an A. You get an A for effort.
All right, I tried. You know,
but your whole idea of guys have to win, James Harden. He hasn't won anything.
But he wins at a high level. He hasn't won a championship. I don't think you have to win a championship to be a superstar.
To lead
but
your
you
team.
You have to be in the hunt and consistently.
All right, last one. Is. Russell Westbrook. Does he make anybody better? Has he won anything? Is he a superstar?
He's been to the final. I think Russell Westbrook's a superstar. I don't. My definition is not as stringent as Rick's. I think AD is a
superstar.
And
that's the issue.
I'm close to
the
but I don't think Zion.
Is Russell
Rick, you stuff. Thank you, Rick. No mercy. Patrick Mahomes has taken the league by storm, becoming the youngest player ever to win a regular season and Super Bowl MVP. When asked if he viewed himself as the new face of the NFL, Mahomes gave credit to Lamar Jackson being on the same level after being this season's unanimous MVP. Mahomes is only 24. Lamar, he's only 23. So we can expect a lot of exciting matchups down the road between the two. Former NFL quarterback and Super Bowl champ Steve Berline is joining us. Steve, is Mahomes-Lamar the next Brady-Manning rivalry in the AFC?
Well, we all sure hope so, I think. It'd be great if it got to that point. But there's a lot of things that have to happen before we can start billing these guys at that level. I mean, they've only had, how many games have they played against each other? Two, I think, so far in their career, and they're both 2 years into it as a starting quarterback. I think there's a lot of things that have to happen still, but truly I think the potential is there for a huge rivalry. We already know what Patrick Mahomes is going to do. If he stays healthy, he's going to rewrite every record that's out there. I mean, if he stays healthy and that team continues to have the weapons that he's got around him, he's going to rewrite everything. And we know what he can do. He's won the big games. He's shown he's got the ability to step up and play at the highest level at the biggest moments. Lamar Jackson, he burst onto the scene this year. There's a lot more questions, I think, about Lamar Jackson when you look at what he's going to do long term. And number one is just how long can he play the way that he's playing? How long is his body going to hold
fair.
Up and allow that him to play at that level? Now, what he did this year, we've never seen out of a quarterback before, running the football the way he did, and his development from year one to year two as a passer, astronomical. And I think he'll continue to work and develop that way because we know his work ethic is at a very high level. He's extremely competitive. He's going to push himself to prove everybody that doubts him wrong. And he's going to do the things he's got to do to continue to develop. Now, the question is whether his body's going to allow him to have that 10, 12, 14-year career playing the way that he does play. If you want to talk about some comparisons, let's talk about Colin Kaepernick, Cam Newton, guys like that that were runners, the athletic quarterbacks that ran the football and were asked to run the football, but their bodies were not able to hold up over time, or they didn't develop as a passer over time. Forget about all the other stuff with Cam Newton and with Colin Kaepernick especially. Look at what happened after he made his run to the Super Bowl. The 12-4 year when he was in 2013, they were 12-4. You know what his records were the next few years? 8-8 in 2014. 2-6 in 2015, 1-10 in 2016, because he didn't evolve and develop as a quarterback. He didn't continue to get better. Defenses figured out how to take away the things he was comfortable with. Can Lamar Jackson continue to stay ahead of that curve? Guess who the offensive coordinator was for both of those quarterbacks? Greg Roman.
Right.
Colin Kaepernick and Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. So Greg Roman, the challenge is on him too as well. If he stays with Lamar Jackson, how can they stay ahead of the curve and keep him developing and evolving as a quarterback? And really, more importantly, I think, as he gets up into his career, he's got to continue to develop as a passer, which I think he will. Again, year one to year two, astronomical. So I think the sky's the limit for him. If his body holds up, these two guys have shown the ability to be able to turn it up and play at a high level in the big games. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, Steve, I agree with you. Look, Mahomes, we already know he's in this. Like, he is, assuming he stays healthy, there are no other questions about him. What he does is sustainable. There's no doubt, and he's got Andy Reid, the great coach. He's got Tyreek Hill. He's got Travis Kelce. He's got, you know, Damian Williams. He's got, you know, Mecole Hardman for the next few years. So he's going to be in this discussion. who's going to be the other guy? I think Lamar is the best choice at this point. My only question is sustainability. Mm-hmm. It's not because we've seen Mahomes win in the playoffs, obviously. We haven't seen Lamar do it. The two good teams he's faced that have seen him twice. I know he saw Cincinnati twice. They're not good. He saw the Browns twice last year. They're not good. Pittsburgh was, you know, injury riddled and all that stuff. The two teams he saw twice that were good, the Chargers 2 years ago and last year the Titans, they bottled him up early. And I know he had big numbers against the Titans and he played okay. Right. I mean, his problem is if they get down in a playoff game, now you got to change everything and he has to become a passer. I agree with you in that this summer is huge for him. Mm-hmm. Because if he makes the same type of leap or even two-thirds the leap that he made last year in the offseason, that's what's necessary. Because as time goes on, Cam Newton, you mentioned. Cam Newton is twice as big as Lamar Jackson.
Right.
And he couldn't take the consistent hits. And it broke his body down. Over time, I think Lamar is, as he slows down, as he takes more hits, he's going to become more of a passing quarterback. And if he can do that well, then this can be Brady Manning.
Yeah, no, I don't think this will be Brady Manning. But it like you said, it has the potential to be, but it's not going to be. These guys matched up 17 times, like five times in the postseason, three or four times in the AFC Championship game. Like, they were the elite of the elite. Like, they literally led their teams, and it was all about them. When I look at these guys, their styles are completely different. Pat Mahomes is very similar. He's kind of a combination of both quarterbacks, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. But you mentioned something that I mentioned earlier. Greg Roman. When it comes to the style of play that Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens play, it fits tremendously well for the regular season. Can they change and turn that up a notch in the postseason? And then you look at the skill guys that he has around him versus Pat Mahomes.
No comparison.
Right. No comparison. You're talking about a guy who has two, arguably, his two biggest targets are his two tight ends. And then you have a receiver who is a smaller guy who's been in and out of the lineup. So he doesn't have as many weapons in the arsenal that Pat Mahomes has. And then outside of these two quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson.
That's what I was going to ask you, Steve. Can he be in the conversation, Deshaun Watson, who people have seemed to poo-poo despite some of the numbers, and we've seen him be spectacular.
We have seen him be, and I'm a huge, you know, Deshaun Watson fan too. I mean, the guy, I've had him as my fantasy quarterback the last couple of years because,
see,
because
right?
I love that guy. I mean, and he's proven himself in the big games too. And his combination of running and passing the foot, he's a thrower, you know.
Yes.
I mean, he can sling it, and there's no doubt. Now, he's way ahead of Lamar Jackson in terms of his pocket ability as a passing quarterback. So you have to put Deshaun in that category too. You got to put Russell Wilson in that category too with what Russell can do as a quarterback. And Russell, he doesn't take a lot of hits, so he's still going to be – he's got another, at least 7 or 8 years left, you would think,
right,
as well.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, Steve, I want to ask you the sustainability of Lamar. We saw three pocket quarterbacks this year get injured, kind of maybe fluky. Drew Brees, Nick Foles, who won a Super Bowl, and Ben Roethlisberger all just hit in the pocket. Lamar, I know he's a running quarterback, but do you really feel he takes a lot of hits? Because to me, it's like he's more Russell Wilson. Elusive, knows when to slide, unlike, say, an RG3.
Well, when you talk about, you mentioned Brees and Roethlisberger, those are two pocket guys that are older up in their career.
Right.
They've had, you know, they've had the cumulative effect of a long career as well. There's no doubt, standing in the pocket, that's the kind of quarterback I was. I got the crap beat out of me for a lot of years.
But I'm still,
as far as you know, I got two new hips and a few other issues, but I'm doing okay. But the bottom line is, everybody's different. I mean, we saw Patrick Mahomes dislocate his knee this year, his kneecap, just on a fluky play on a quarterback sneak. Durability is the question with all these guys. We're, as you said, we had a body of work of how many games between Brady and Manning? I mean, it was 17 meetings between those two guys. It's going to define itself over time. The question is going to be whether Lamar can continue to develop as a passing quarterback and whether they put weapons around him. Mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes, by the way, makes everybody on his team better.
Right.
Because he's got the special qualities as a pocket passer who can also break a defense down with his feet, but also especially in extending plays. And when he gets outside of that pocket, he's not looking for a completion or to get a first down. He's looking to throw the dagger. He's looking to end it right there, one play. And there are very few quarterbacks that have that ability, so he's very unique.
Doesn't running – and look, I got to admit, I've been surprised that Lamar was fully healthy through this year because I didn't think a guy could run that much and survive. But it does put you at a greater risk, doesn't
no doubt.
It? I mean, running the football like that.
And
he always took some shots. He did take a few big shots.
He took a few, but he's really good at avoiding the hits.
He's
really smart and doesn't take a lot of big hits. But as we all know, there still is a cumulative effect. If you're asking him to run the ball 15 to 20 times a game, all the cutting on his knees and on his ankles and the breaking down and trying to make the moves that he makes, bodies falling on top of him, getting yourself in awkward positions. As you age, those things start to take a toll. So you have to evolve. He's not going to be able to run the ball when he's 30 years old the way he's running the ball right now. It's just you can't ask him to do that if you want him to be your quarterback long term. No mercy.
The New York Knicks are cleaning house yet again with longtime exec Steve Mills, the latest front office member to be sent packing. But now a report from the New York Post says that the Knicks may be looking to their past for a solution. According to, quote, sources, New York is interested in bringing back Jeff Van Gundy or his former assistant, Tom Thibodeau, who also had stints as the head man with the Bulls and Timberwolves. Van Gundy already kind of dismissed the rumor this morning on the radio. Chris, my Knicks are a disaster. Do you think they should go after Van Gundy?
Or Thibodeau, you mean?
Or Thibodeau.
Look, both Jeff and Tom are great basketball guys. They both know the game, you know, very well. I covered Jeff when he coached the Knicks before, and he was a very good coach, got them to the NBA Finals. But, look, he's been away from the game 10 years, and I know he's coaching some of the Team
international,
USA,
yes.
International groups. But when I look at Jeff and more so Thibodeau, because there's a track record there, the game has changed now. There was a time when I thought Tom Thibodeau was one of the top three coaches in the NBA when he coached Chicago. And their only star was Derrick Rose, and they made the playoffs all five of the seasons he was there. And twice they had the best defense in the league. The two of the other years, they were top six defensively in the league. So he was a defensive coach. He goes to Minnesota, and they are horrible defensively for his entire tenure there. They're 27th, 25th, and 24th in the league defensively with a great defensive coach. What that tells me, and I know you can blame Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, they weren't defensive-minded guys. Thibodeau could make anybody a defensive-minded guy when he coached it. And when he, and I know they understand how the game's changed, but when Tibbs and Jeff were great defensive coaches, it was pack in the paint and force the teams to shoot the three-pointer and not get shots in the paint. Well, that doesn't work nowadays. And I'm not saying Tibbs,
shooting threes.
Right, they want that. I'm not saying Tibbs didn't try to adjust in Minnesota, but obviously it wasn't successful. If they're looking at I don't think you necessarily have to go back in time in New York to you know, get you a new coach. But if you're looking at a guy with former Knick ties, it should be Mark Jackson. And I believe Mark has been blackballed throughout the league, but New York is one place that would definitely accept him. The fans would love him because he was a former player there. He's from New York. And they would give him time, which I think is more important. You look at what he did in Golden State. He was huge for them. I know he didn't get him over the hump like Kerr did, but defensively he created a mindset. And offensively, he gave Steph and Klay the confidence, the swagger to believe they could be as great as they became. And so I think Mark Jackson for a young team would be a great guy in New York. But I wouldn't personally go with Jeff or Tom.
Yeah, for me, New York is one of those teams right now where they don't know who they are. They don't know what they want to do. They remind me very, very much so of the Cleveland Browns in National Football League.
Oof.
Like, you're flip-flopping coaches. Your owner doesn't really know what they want to do. They're at odds with fans and whatever. But to your point, the game has moved beyond these two individuals, Jeff Van Gundy and Tibbs. I live in Minnesota. So I had the opportunity to watch Tibbs up close in person, and it just didn't work. It didn't work because of exactly what you're talking about. The unwillingness to evolve. And when you have that, you can't really be a special coach in leagues that got, you have to evolve. You have to adapt to where the game is and where your players are. And you have to be able to relate. And that's what the Knicks need. I don't know who that coach is specifically. I would love to see Mark Jackson get that opportunity for all the reasons you mentioned. The New York ties, both growing up there and playing there. And then he still understands the game, and I think he can relate to players. But I don't know what the answer is for the Knicks. I don't know if there is a perfect answer for the Knicks, specifically with Daryl Morey still in control.
I know what the
answer is. James Dolan.
James Dolan. I know what isn't the answer. And when I hear Van Gundy and Tibbs, I'm thinking this is a bad rerun episode of Welcome Back, Carter. You know, like seriously, like, why are we going there? You know what I mean? Like, this is not what the Knicks need. This is like comfort food. Do you know what I mean? You're like, yeah, where's my mac and cheese? I know what that tastes like, mm-hmm. and I can eat this. No! This is why this hasn't worked out for all these years, Chris. You know this. Jeff Van Gundy, when I covered the Knicks, and we both did, Jeff Van Gundy was the assistant coach. I've known Jeff forever, for 25 years. I covered Mark Jackson. You brought up Mark Jackson. In college, when he played at St. John's, that's how long I've been around. So I'm with you. I would rather see something like that than to go backwards with these two guys who have been out of it or didn't have the success when he got his second chance. Not a third time. But is Larry Brown not available if you're going that
he's
route?
He's like 80. Rob, it's not just the coaching situation. Six coaches in 7 years. It's the owner. It starts with Dolan.
We know it's the owner.
Nobody wants to play for him. We know that. Kevin Durant kind of said a lot of negative stuff.
Did you see what they did to Charles Oakley?
Listen, they do that to Oakley. I mean, it's an embarrassment for two decades now. Seriously, since Patrick Ewing left, this team has been a dumpster fire. Total disaster. I don't know what the answer is. It certainly isn't, gutting the front office and trying to bring in all these outsiders. If you're asking me, as a Knicks fan for two decades, I still wear my Patrick Ewing jersey to coach my kids' basketball games. I do that. I honestly would go to the Golden State Warriors and pluck somebody from their front office. They were very forward-thinking over the last 5 or 6 years. Bring in a young guy, totally change a culture, and try something new.
But this is what happens to teams when you lose over and over and over again, and you're such a storied franchise. Like, you look at the Washington Redskins. I remember them going back to Joe Gibbs.
Look at where they are now.
Look at where they are. They still haven't been able to find that guy that can get them over the hump and get them into the winning ways. The Knicks are going right down that road.
How about the Detroit Lions? You know, that's your hometown team, right?
Like, these teams, they just have a cult. They need to shift in the culture and their thinking moving forward.
One thing I'll say is this, and obviously Steve Mills was, you know, fired as the president, and you got Scott Perry there. One thing they did do, and I know the team is a mess right now, but they've put them in position at least where, like, they got 1 and 2 year deals. So they have a lot of cap room. You got some young players. They got like 7 draft picks over the next few years. They got a lot of draft picks. So if somebody can come in and, you know, get the players there. Like, they got the room to go get free agents.
Nobody
wasn't
going to
change the image.
But wasn't
they brought in a business brand consultant.
Oh,
but wasn't that Chris Dale?
By the
way,
there's
nobody good in free agency available this year. There's nobody.
But that's what they should wait till next year. Don't spend the money now and waste it up. Who are you getting now?
I thought that's why they brought Chris Dale in, and he couldn't get any players to come. Remember, he's a real popular coach.
True.
Right? Nobody came. No
mercy. Thanks for listening to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm Jenny Taft. Join us again at the same time tomorrow morning, 9:30 Eastern. We'll see you then. Facts, sports, one of one.